Hi, all. Thanks for dropping by. So, lecture seven, September 13th. I'm always concerned when Friday the 13th happens on a Wednesday. Lecture notes page is 64. A reminder, if you are a freshman, unlikely, marketing major or minor, or if you know a marketing major or minor freshman, we're going to do kickball tomorrow. So I just ran over from the office to sort of train up for that kickball. And Friday, September 15th from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Commons Field, open your May 4th Memorial with the Kona Ice Truck. Internship opportunity. I don't have full details. It just came to my desk. Track Athletics, a local fitness company in Fairlawn, Ohio, is offering an exclusive internship opportunity that provides hands-on experience in various aspects of marketing. It says October to December, and it also says in person, so I don't have full info on that. But the area is social media marketing, advertising, content creation, and more, so you get practical experience working with these folks, and also working with their ad agency as well. So if you're interested and motivated, contact me, Al Marks at Kent, and I'll try to dig up the rest of the details and put you in touch with this person so we can figure out the rest of the stuff. So that was a new thing that came to me. You know that Mini Test 3 opened on Tuesday and will stay open until Sunday, at which time it will close, 11:59 p.m., covering lectures 5 and 6. The next one won't open until next week. It'll cover this lecture and lecture 8. Enhanced Learning Extra Credit number 1 and Packback number 1 close tonight at 11:59 p.m. Entirely optional, somebody was asking me. These are optional extra credits. Can they hurt my grade? No, they can only help your grade. All they do is add points to your grade. Don't want to do them? Don't do them. It's your grade, but it can't hurt your grade. It's only optional extra credit. Just a heads up, the next one that will open tomorrow is a cutesy role play. So we're doing something other than the standard click and drag or that sort of stuff. So you get to role play an ethical, socially responsible decision-making process with the cartoon characters in McGraw Hill Connect. It doesn't match everything we do exactly, but you get three attempts, so you should be able to figure it out by the third attempt. If you want to do that, some students find it amusing. Ethical marketing, this came across not too long ago. So while I'm preaching to you as students, trust me, there are real-world business people preaching to real-world business people about the need to be ethical in marketing. So this writer, you guys know Forbes magazine, the Forbes 500 and stuff like that? We know Forbes. So this is out of Forbes. Ethical marketing, four values all brands should strive for. Today's consumers demand that companies not only offer quality products and services, but behave ethically. Yes, I hope, in their marketing practices. Ethical behavior is a critical aspect of building long-term relationships with consumers. Here are this writer's four fundamental perennial philosophical values that guide ethical marketing. First of all, honesty. My comment, don't lie, don't cheat, don't steal? Well, they're agreeing with me. Honesty means telling the truth, being transparent, avoiding deception. Yes. In the past, many companies have used deceptive tactics in their marketing practices to gain a competitive edge. Boo. However, with the rise of social media and other digital channels, such tactics are easily exposed and can damage your brand's reputation, as they should. An example of deception is one we mentioned in passing, Volkswagen's diesel emissions scandal. The company admitted to using software that could detect when cars were being tested for emissions and then adjust the performance of their car to pass the test, cheaters. The company faced massive backlash, with many consumers feeling betrayed and questioning the brand's ethics. Well, duh. Respect for individual rights. This includes respecting privacy, data protection, avoiding discrimination. Consumers have the right to control their personal data and decide how it is used by your company. Brands must ensure they're transparent about their data collection and usage practices and obtain explicit consent from consumers. No means no. A recent example of this is the General Data Protection Regulation, GDPR, in the European Union, where they're much more concerned about and strict about data privacy issues. Brands that prioritize individual rights and respect consumer privacy are more likely to build trust and loyalty with their consumers. Respect for human dignity. Brands must recognize the inherent worth and value of each person and treat them accordingly. In marketing, respect for human dignity means avoiding tactics that exploit or manipulate consumers, such as intentional deception. For instance, while influencer marketing can be an effective way for businesses to reach new audiences, some influencers have been criticized for promoting brands they don't actually use or actually endorse, or for promoting products that might actually be harmful or unethical. What are you doing? This lack of authenticity and transparency can be seen as a violation of respect for human dignity. Responsibility. Marketers have a responsibility to ensure that their marketing efforts do not harm people or society. They should also be responsible for ensuring that their products and services are safe and reliable. We'll get to more on that in lecture. For example, 2019, a well-known vaping brand, I added who that was, to be explicit, Juul. How many of you guys know Juul? Yeah. Was criticized for its marketing practices, which contributed to the rise of teenage vaping. The company had used colorful packaging and social media influencers to target young people, despite knowing that its products were highly addictive and harmful. The company's marketing practices had undermined the common good and contributed to a public health crisis. Another example of irresponsibility is the issue of greenwashing, the practice of making false or misleading claims about environmental benefits of a product or service or brand. It has become a significant problem as consumers are becoming more aware of environmental issues and are looking for sustainable products. My comment, as you've heard me say before and will again, sheesh, please don't lie, don't cheat, don't steal in the classroom, in your personal lives, or in business, for goodness sakes. So this guy's conclusion in Forbes magazine, ethical marketing is critical for building trust and long-term relationships with consumers. Brands that prioritize honesty, responsibility, respect for individual rights and human dignity will not only meet consumer expectations, but also set themselves apart from their competitors. By implementing these values in their marketing strategies, brands can create a positive impact on society while also driving business success. And eventually, when we get to the end of this whole lecture and we talk about what this all means, one of the things it means is ethical business practices are important because they do affect society as well as your consumers and your employees. Anybody know for any reason the company Backmarket? Anybody know Backmarket? So this deals with a company doing socially responsible marketing as well. Backmarket takes a bite out of Apple's keynote event with ad hyping refurbished devices. Anybody enough of an Apple fan that they followed yesterday's semi-annual, whatever, annual review of the, some people over here, were you excited by anything? No, that's one of the problems. When you reveal, and pretty soon you just reveal and say, oh boy, you got one more color, one more lens, yay. There's nothing really new there. So the point I'm getting at is this company, as you'll see in a minute, planned its release to go to yesterday's big Apple release of its new product. So Backmarket, a marketplace for refurbished devices, is on a mission to steal Apple's thunder with a global campaign taking aim at big tech and its obsession with new products. So we're seeing a bit about social responsibility marketing, a bit about competition, a bit about getting attention for a campaign running against Apple. Coinciding with Apple's annual keynote event yesterday, Backmarket's Let Them Buy New is a biting parody of the tech industry's dominant players, a bit of humor in advertising. The campaign uses a spot with gadget-hungry consumers clamoring to get their hands on the new one, and a sneaky stunt targeting influencers in deceptive out-of-home ads. Let's see. I really would like that to act like it was going to play something for me. Here we go. Let's see this one.
The new one is here. Now in all new colors, like gray and other gray, with less of these and more of these, all for a breathtaking new price. The new one will make you move. It'll give you new friends to hang out like this. Not these friends. New friends. Even this fresh new artist uses the new one. The new one is a vibe. And you have to buy it. Because there's no other option. Or we choose refurbished. Because high-quality, more affordable, more sustainable devices aren't yet to come. They're already here. Let them buy new. We'll buy Backmarket.
So let those other silly people spend their money on that 12th camera lens you buy from Backmarket. So the video mimics Apple's classic marketing tropes with shots of shiny floating devices and dancers triumphantly hoisting laptops and tablets. The spot clip quickly goes left as what appears to be an iPhone morphs into an exaggerated version of itself with extra camera lenses and new colors like gray and other gray. As the product features become more absurd, the quantities become as uncountable as the number of times the word new is used in the accompanying song. We see the faces of the cool crowd go from excitement and desperation to confusion and fatigue. So there's their ad message. Commercial will launch in the US and it is the first in a series that will run internationally. Back Market is currently available in 17 countries. So there's a media plan and a bit about global marketing. We circled the Apple keynote from yesterday on our calendar from the very start. We're trying to change behavior. We've been trying to change culture. And if you want to expose new for what it really is, there's no better time than the day when new is on full display and everyone's watching. So we're trying to literally change consumers' attitudes and behavior. Back Market's core mission is to sway consumers into embracing and converting to refurbished devices and to tackle the 50 million metric tons of electronic waste produced annually, making it the largest waste stream globally and accounting for 70% of toxic waste. So again, socially responsible marketing. Back Market operates on a core value of sabotage, meaning we're not just here to sell refurbished tech, we're here to change the way people think about tech and circularity, period. Let Them Buy New is now an invitation to join our joyful revolution, and there's much more to come. So, changing consumers' attitudes and behavior, and we would say for good. Here's one last piece where they go into what they're doing.
A metal lockbox. Lockbox will open September 12th. I'm guessing it deals with the iPhone launch.
This is a professionally refurbished iPhone from Back Market. Requires 91.3% less raw materials, 89% less e-waste, and 91.6% less carbon footprint. Wow!
Cet iPhone reconditionné est quand même magnifique.
So, will these influencers get out there and spread the word? Will this catch on? Will people be engaged enough to do reusable, sustainable, instead of always buying new for that extra color of gray? We'll have to see what happens. Are they able to actually change consumers' attitudes and their behavior? We'll find out. All right, on to lecture notes, page 64, chapter 4, page 108 in the textbook, which is picking back up with ethics, which we just got started with last time. And we were just talking about examples where things did not go well. So Nike has over time been criticized, despite being a pretty good company, a pretty big company, about some of its business practices, and it's responded, we can say appropriately. So they've been criticized for not being socially responsible in their creation of goods. They've been accused of using sweatshops and child labor overseas in horrible working conditions. They've been accused of targeting low-income families by making shoes an expensive status symbol for poor urban street kids who clearly can't afford the product. What have they done to try to be corrective a bit? Well, they've created a code of conduct and a six-point plan to ensure more socially responsible labor practices. They commissioned an independent study of Nike factories abroad to report on how they were doing and what they could do to improve. So they're not ignoring this. In terms of sweatshops, et cetera, they created a huge social responsibility department. They publish a corporate responsibility report to let the public know how they're addressing these issues and being better corporate citizens. And they created a thing called Nike Foundation that works to create positive social change around the world. So, hello. It's a fun day for me in technology. So here is, for the next gen, here's a letter from our athletes. Here's our purpose is to move the world forward through the power of sport, and then how they are doing that by donating to good causes. So they have been criticized, but they've done something about it. They've engaged in a variety of corrective behaviors. So they feel it's important to the consumers, important to the public, important to them. So how do we think about the issue of ethicalness and legality? Is my philosophy guy still here from the other day? Guy who had philosophy? So sometimes we'll talk in a philosophy course about legal and ethical. And how do you think about those two things? So you can see we have our four quadrants there, ethical and unethical, and legal and illegal. And you would hope there would be some clear thoughts about which quadrants to be in. It's not always clear that there are. So I would hope in your decision making, at your job, if you look at something and you talk about it and you say, you know, this is unethical and probably illegal, you don't spend a lot of time thinking about how to do it, you would think. On the other hand, if something's ethical and legal, it's okay. You should discuss, is it worth doing? Does it match our business proposition, et cetera, et cetera. There are a little more gray areas here, though, that we might mull over a little bit. What about something that is ethical but illegal? Might be hard to think about in business, maybe, but can you think of anything in life, maybe, that would be technically ethical but would be illegal? From your philosophy course, just from thinking about life as you live it. What could be an example of something that could be ethical to do but might be illegal? Yeah. Interesting example from the Holocaust in World War II. In Germany, at least, all Jews had to be turned in. You couldn't hide them. You could be sent off to the camps yourself if you did. There was danger involved, but it was perhaps the ethical thing to do in that environment, even though it was illegal. Did you have an example? You're scratching your head. Anybody have another example that strikes them as something that could be ethical but illegal? Maybe a little. How many of you guys came from a high school where there was an absolutely zero policy for any kind of drugs? Is that something you guys had? So in your school, if you'd given someone an aspirin, technically, that you had with you, technically, you'd given them a drug. They could have busted you for that. Or, I don't know, an inhaler sort of thing. Might be illegal in your school given their policies, but somebody's really suffering. Maybe you could help them. It might be the ethical thing to do. Trying to think of my business example, which has just gone out of my head because I was late getting to class today. Ethical, but illegal. Well, you could argue that in some cases, some drug companies know that some drugs can do something that they haven't been approved for, but still can do good. And it's technically illegal to offer those drugs off script, okay? They can't advertise them that way, but they know they'll do some good. They might find a way to do something to help people, even though technically, according to the FDA, they aren't allowed to, for example. So if something is ethical or illegal in your company that you're considering, you might have a way of thinking about that, asking about that. Likewise, how about something that's unethical but legal? So turning the question the other way, can you think of anything in life as you know it that could be unethical yet still legal? Hard question. Yo, let's see what we got down here that might be unethical but legal. Shooting a zoo animal. Why am I shooting the zoo animal? Because it's attacking me. So is it ethical to kill an animal who's attacking you? Well, let's say you think it's going to attack you. Say it hasn't attacked you yet. You believe it's going to attack you. So no, because then it would be legal. So so is it unethical to kill any animal, sort of the point, even if they're about to attack you? All right. In business, if you buy a company in a small town and you own the company, and it's a major employer in the small town, but you own the company, can you shut that company down? You own the company. Can you shut it down? Yeah, of course you can shut it down. It's now going to devastate the entire community and put an entire community out of business. Maybe you can do it, but it's sure not very ethical to make that decision. Maybe there'd be something else you could do. So again, these are situations where you might want to have a decision process among management to think about how do we deal with these things, these gray areas, these question mark areas, so we don't end up in jail, being fined, having consumers turn on us. Sometimes I like to use the example of if I make this decision, and in tomorrow it's in the student newspaper or in the Plain Dealer, Larry Marks did this. Would I be okay with that? Would I be happy? Would it work out okay? You might have that newspaper thing in mind, newspaper headline in mind. How would it play out for you if you make this decision? Marketing does have a lot of criticism against it. How many of you guys have Uncle Joey, who really doesn't like business and comes to Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever and starts complaining about business? Anybody have that guy in their family? Thinks business is bad, advertising is bad. One person has that. I think there's more than just you. And so Uncle Joey's always ranting on about how those darn marketers are driving up the price of whatever it is or whatever. So people are like that. Some of the criticisms are legit. Some are not especially. So we do get criticized in marketing for driving up the cost of goods for high prices. We get criticized for, as we should, deceptive practices. We should be criticized. High pressure selling, shoddy, harmful, unsafe products, planned obsolescence, think Apple, poor service to disadvantaged consumers. And we get criticized because these things can have impacts, negative impacts on consumers, on society at large, and on other businesses who we are not treating fairly. Competition is supposed to be competition, but it's supposed to be fair competition. So, let's think about this issue of high prices. If you had no marketing at all, would you imagine that prices for products could be lower? Yeah, they could probably be lower without any marketing. No, really, they couldn't be any lower. Hey, Webbies, are you awake? Because another one here is, one person here answered the question. What do you think? No marketing, would prices be lower? Okay, higher? No difference? Thank you. All right, so we could argue that without any marketing, prices would be lower. What's the problem with that premise, though? Yeah. Nobody would know about the product. Nobody would know where to get it. Part of marketing is getting the product out to you. Seems like maybe those would be important things to consider. So we do end up raising prices through our distribution system. Should retailers and wholesalers and producers make a profit for doing what they do? Yeah. Well, then those markups do add up prices. Consumers want convenience. They want lots of assortment. They want easy return privileges. Somebody's got to pay for those things. And so, yes, of course, prices are higher than they would otherwise be for those things, but they bring you value. Sorry, Uncle Joey. We get criticized for having high advertising and high promotion costs driving up prices. Well, that's true, but how many of us prefer buying Levi's over, I don't know, Levi's jeans over, I don't know, Kohl's jeans? Well, a bunch of us want Levi's. We don't want Kohl's. It's a brand name. It means something to us. Or Coke or Heineken. So the idea of advertising and promotion brings value because we understand what the brand is. You know, when you go to the drugstore, right? We have the store brand. So here we have Rite Aid aspirin for $2.49. And on the left, we have Bayer aspirin for $6.49. Why is there such a difference in price? Isn't aspirin aspirin? How many people say aspirin is aspirin? How many people say aspirin is aspirin, but I'm special and I would prefer the branded product? Thank you very much. How many of your parents would say aspirin is aspirin, but I want the branded product? Thank you very much. Okay, I'm worth it. I don't know exactly the difference, but I know who Bayer is. I don't know about Rite Aid. Give me Bayer. It's the branded product. I feel I'm special. It's better for me, right? So there are people who say, hey, I don't want to pay the higher price. All that marketing waste stuff, I'll take the cheap stuff. I mean the other priced product, the good value product. And others say, no, I want the more expensive one. And now this is going to change over time. This example is from a bit ago before we were into understanding cancer in new ways through artificial intelligence and through DNA testing. But research shows that there are 200 genes involved with colon and breast cancers. This explains why tumors from the same organ look different across patients and why medicines help some patients but not other patients. So you're a drug company, you're out there, you're doing all this research, and it costs a boatload of money, still true today with AI and DNA research. Why would you spend the money to figure out these problems if you weren't going to turn a profit? And by the way, does each research project turn out a useful drug? No. A lot of wasted energy, time, money to get to a solution. Now, there are people that take advantage of the situation, drug companies that take advantage of the situation. But nobody's going to do the work if they don't get any money for it. Some people, of course, take advantage. 2019, attorneys general for more than 40 states are alleging the nation's largest generic drug manufacturers conspired illegally to artificially inflate and manipulate prices for more than 100 different generic drugs, including treatments for diabetes, cancer, arthritis, and other medical conditions. The lawsuit filed in federal court in Connecticut, whatever Friday that was, also names 15 individual senior executives responsible for sales, marketing, and pricing. Then in 2022, Teva, one company involved in the suit, paid out $430 million to settle the alleged price fixing. My personal opinion is somebody should be in jail, but I don't run the court system. Don't engage that sort of behavior. So nobody's going to do the work if you don't pay them for it. But then we run into people that do things illegally. In June 2020, former Bumblebee Food CEO Chris Lewitschinsky was sentenced to more than 3 years, there we go, in prison for conspiring to fix prices for canned tuna. Fixing prices for canned tuna. Come on, dude. And four poultry industry executives from JBS-owned Pilgrim's Pride and Claxton Poultry were indicted by the Department of Justice on price fixing, illegal, bid rigging, illegal. Each executive faces a maximum penalty of 4 years in prison and a $1 million fine. In 2022, they were acquitted, but in 2020, Pilgrim's Pride agreed to pay a $110 million fine for something we didn't do. We didn't do that, but we'll give you $110 million. So people don't quite follow the idea of don't lie, don't cheat, don't steal. So markups that result in high prices often reflect services that customers want and are willing to pay for. Sometimes they're just cheating, but convenience, imagery, safety, service, return privileges, warranties, all of those things deserve reward, profit to be paid out for convenience, image, safety, service, and return privileges. But illegal price fixing has consequences. So in that case, Uncle Joey's right. Some business is bad, others just good. Deceptive practices were criticized for it, and unfortunately, some people engage in that, giving us all a bad name. So deceptive pricing, for example, falsely advertising factory or wholesale prices or large sale reductions from phony high retail prices, those are all deceptive. They shouldn't occur. I do like stories that will say, 50% off manufacturer's price, and then in fine print, but at least it's there, they say, this product may not have been offered in our stores at the manufacturer's price. So they're advertising 50% off from the manufacturer's price and then saying, well, hey, we didn't ever offer it at that price, but it's still a sale. The deceptive mortgage rates, of course, caused the big recession a long time ago. 2020 class action lawsuit claimed that Old Navy, of all people, lists false or misleading original prices to create the illusion that items are being sold at discount, that settlement cost them $340 million. Deceptive promotion, overstating a product's features or performance, running rig contests that nobody actually is able to win. Pfizer, drug companies often seem to go over the line, was fined $2.3 billion for promoting the sale of Bextra for several usages and dosages that the FDA specifically declined to approve due to safety concerns. Whoops, that slipped over the ethical into the illegal. FTC entered into a $22 million settlement with the manufacturer of Willow Curve regarding unsubstantiated pain relief claims and deceptive native advertising. So this was an ad where this Willow Cure thing was going to cure your pain. It was all bogus. They were sued. Deceptive endorsement practices may be met with FTC enforcement, include such things as falsely claiming an endorsement by a third party. You say, hey, this is endorsed by the American Dental Association, by the NFL, whatever it is. Not true. FTC comes at you. Misrepresenting whether an endorser is an actual current or recent user. Can't get people to lie about using your product. Using an endorsement to make deceptive performance claims. Hey, I use this product and it cured my cancer and made me better looking. Well, that's not true. Failing to disclose an unexpected material connection with an endorser. They own part of your company and they're endorsing your product and you don't tell anybody that. Misrepresenting that the experience of endorsers represents consumers' typical or ordinary experience. Again, you're misleading the public with your endorser. And of course, endorsers are a big deal, right? In advertising and social media, etc. So you have to watch out and not slide into deceptive practices here. Deceptive packaging. Companies sometimes know they're fooling you. So we're engaging in exaggerated packaging contents through subtle design, using misleading labels, for example, food labels that aren't honest. When you pick up that box of cereal and it's only two-thirds full, or the bag of chips and it's not full, they always say on the package, may have settled due to shipping. They also, though, tell you the actual weight of the product. So at least you have some sense of what you're buying, even though it's not full in the package. So here, you guys know these little cherry tomato things? You've seen them before, little cherry tomatoes. That's a nice little package to buy in the grocery store, right? I mean, that looks pretty good. Protects the things. They're probably nice and washed. I'll buy that. Looks okay to me. Well, let's open it up. Wait a second. Is that that? Where'd all the tomatoes go? Well, it turns out that, of course, they use this label on top to hide what was there. What's more, in the middle of the package, they put this big hump to protect the tomatoes, but also covered up the label so you couldn't see it was there, and you're getting 12, let's say potatoes or tomatoes? What am I talking about? I don't know. Potatoes, no, tomatoes. So you get 12 tomatoes instead of, you know, whatever it looked like you were getting, right? You know what you're doing. You know what you're doing. When you engage in deceptive practices, you piss off legislatures who then pass laws against you and everybody else in your industry. For example, Fleischmann's yeast made ridiculous claims a long time ago. Among other things, they claimed that it would straighten crooked teeth. Your yeast doesn't do that. They made other claims, outrageous claims as well. This resulted a long time ago in legislation, the Wheeler-Lee Act in 1938, that gave the FTC power to regulate unfair or deceptive acts or practices. Just what I want is legislation ruling how I advertise my product. But it comes about because people misbehave. Can lead to fines. Apple agreed to pay $113 million to 34 states, as I'm sure you heard, for slowing down the batteries in older iPhones using their software updates to slow down your battery. Now, we do have an interesting side discussion. In Europe, they're very picky, and puffery in many European countries would be considered illegal. What is puffery? Well, puffery as a legal term refers to promotional statements and claims that express subjective rather than objective views, such that no reasonable person would take them literally. So I say to you, come to Larry's Coffee Shop in Kent, Ohio, for the best coffee in the world. That's my claim. And it isn't. Is that deception? Or is it puffery? Deception. That's a deceptive claim. It's clearly not the best cup of coffee in the world. Puffery. Okay? Why is it puffery? Nope, not the reason it's puffery. Why is it puffery? It's an opinion. And puffery says, hey, it's a subjective rather than an objective view. Subjectively, it's my coffee, and I'm telling you it's the best coffee in the world. So it's really hard to state that. Plus, by the way, would most reasonable people in the world imagine that Larry's Coffee Shop in Kent, Ohio has the best coffee in the world? Is that a plausible claim that most people say, yeah, I came to Kent for the best? No, probably not something that a reasonable person would identify as being truth, right? I say, come to Larry's Coffee Shop in Kent, Ohio for the least expensive cup of coffee in Kent. Does that seem like it's puffery? Could it be deceptive in some way? What if it isn't the cheapest cup? Puffery or deception? Deception. It's an objective measure. And could you believe that Larry has the cheapest cup of coffee? Well, sure, you could believe that claim. And yet it's objectively wrong. You're deceiving the public. So, puffery in the U.S., okay. Reasonable people aren't going to believe it. And it's subjective anyhow. Deception, not so good. Be aware of what you're doing. These are some examples of things that I've run into and occasionally taken a picture of. Crust 54, best pizza in the city. Might want to see who says that. Follow this truck for the best chopped liver in New York. Might want to see who says that. Ocean's Market, I think that says the best donut at the beach. This one I liked. We were in Gibraltar, and I liked the way they phrased it for their fish and chips. Probably the best fish and chips in Gibraltar. Okay, that's believable. You didn't make the absolute claim. Probably. So I thought that was okay. Obviously, we used to have the idea of buyer beware. Doesn't matter what I say. You're dumb enough to buy it. It's your problem. Fortunately, we moved beyond that attitude, and obviously that attitude harms consumers, right? You were silly enough to buy it, that's your problem. So we've moved away from caveat emptor, let the buyer beware, to more reasonable standards. High-pressure selling. Some salespeople are trained to deliver smooth, canned talks to entice purchase. Anybody? Sometimes I get people that work for a company like that. They're giving a canned sales pitch. Anybody have that? No. So, high-pressure selling persuades people to buy goods they had no intent of buying. And that's the problem. Not that your sales pitch is smooth, but that you're selling people things that they don't need, want, desire, can't afford through your persuasive high-pressure sales pitch. High-pressure selling can occur because of things like prizes going to your top salesperson without considering how they're doing the selling. It does happen, but it's not standard business practice, thank goodness. There are bad actors, of course. It's not good, obviously, for long-term relationships. You sell people things they don't need, pretty soon they realize that they don't need them. They aren't coming back to you. And in some states, you have I forget exactly what it's called, the next day rule, or you have 3 days to back out of a contract. If you were pressured into it, you can say, hey, I'm not going to be held up to that contract. Unsafe products. This includes products that are not well made, services that are not well performed, and obviously this is not what we talk about when we say discovering and satisfying consumers' needs, wants, and desires. It also includes products that deliver little benefit or that may even prove harmful. This example is too fresh. It's in the news right now, so I don't know how it's going to play out. We'll have to see. Has anybody heard the latest business news about cough and cold medicines? Maybe you know what I'm referring to. What's going on? Ineffective. So apparently, the decongestant, I gather, used in all of these brands of cough and cold medicines, is supposed to clean up your stuffy nose. Apparently, from what we're hearing right now, we'll see how it plays out, the FDA has said, it's not harmful, it just doesn't do anything. It's useless. So these things, you ever take one of those, it's not really clearing up your stuffy nose? Because arguably, the ingredient they say is going to clean it up isn't. So we'll see if this becomes a thing and how the FDA treats it. So, why do we get unsafe products? Well, some manufacturers just don't care what they're putting out. So, you know, there are a lot of good people in the world, there's a lot of good marketers in the world, there's a lot of good manufacturers in the world, and there are some that just don't give a hoot, and they create bad products. It comes because some production gets more and more complex, and it's really hard to get it right. And so we end up producing products that aren't as they should be. No excuse, but still, it's a reason, I guess. You don't train your labor very well because it's too expensive to train them, or you just don't want to do it, so they produce shoddy products. Poor quality control. Go talk to operations management about how to improve that. And sometimes, of course, and unfortunately, you just have people that are dishonest producing bad products. So these are all issues. Takata airbag recall, you've heard about that, that the airbags, as they exploded open, were harming people, hurting people, or exploding when they weren't supposed to, affected not only Takata, but a lot of car companies. Walmart regularly has to pull things like children's jewelry that are made with toxic metals, salmonella, problems in our food supply here in the States. U.S. lawmakers heard from salmonella victims of peanut butter. So one year, a particular brand, their peanut butter had salmonella in it. It was making people sick. Anybody know a local company that makes peanut butter? Relatively local? No? Yeah? Smucker's makes peanut butter. Their peanut butter was safe. They were not involved in the scandal. But what do you think the overall sales of their peanut butter happened to them when the scandal came out that buying peanut butter makes people sick? They tanked too, right? They weren't responsible, but their sales were hurt as well. We heard about, I think y'all were cognizant of, Chipotle having to shut their plants down and train people on how not to make people sick. Wash your hands after you go to the bathroom, for example. So they actually shut down and did a training day a couple years ago. The Consumer Product Safety Commission has the mission of protecting consumers against unreasonable risk of injury by developing voluntary, yay, and mandatory standards, banning dangerous consumer products, issuing recalls of products already on the market, and researching potential hazards associated with consumer products. One thing I keep hearing about, and I'm stunned, how long have we been having babies in the United States? A silly question. I mean, forever. And yet, we've been manufacturing year after year. I hear products that chop off babies' fingers, collapse on the kid, kids suffocate from them. You guys heard any of that? What do you do? You can't figure this out? And they have to recall the product. Maybe figure it out before it chops off some kid's fingers. So that's their website. Oh, yeah. So speaking of baby products, let's see if this is still active. From 2023, Fisher-Price re-announces the recall of 4.7 million Rock and Play sleepers. At least 8 deaths have occurred after the recall. So here's their Rock and whatever was Play sleeper. Infant fatalities have occurred in this thing after infants rolled from their back onto their stomach or side while unrestrained or in other circumstances. Give it back and stop selling the silly thing. Fisher-Price. Come on, dudes.
As far as F...
So here is my friend over at AAA Motorhomes towards Ravenna, talking about his view of this topic in his business.
As far as ethics to my business, I feel very strongly that I don't want to put a product out there that's going to cause a customer a problem down the road. If there's an issue with the house that I see that they may not see, I take care of it. I don't paint over it. I fix it right. And with our new homes, for example, you know, there's a lot of dealers that'll just order this so cheapest house they could possibly get. But I found that, you know, you put a couple options in there that the customer would never see when they walk through your model. For example, water shutoffs on the toilets and the faucets versus having to crawl underneath to shut the whole house off. Or center shelves, you know, you open up the cabinets, you don't even think to open up the cabinets when you're walking through a model home. Then you get to move in, you start putting your pots and pans, and there's no center shelves. So, you know, little things like that we make sure we put in the house, because I want 100% referrals, and I don't cover things up. I don't believe in cutting corners. If there's a problem, we fix it right, no matter what the cost is, because I know that person's going to be happy with their house. It's going to be safe and affordable. They're going to come back, and they're going to send referrals back to me. So every decision I make, and I instill that in all my people, that if they're making decisions without me, that we need to do it right the first time, no matter what the cost, and it's going to pay dividends in the long run.
So importantly, it's not just him saying it as the owner of the company. He tells his people, look, do the right thing for our customers. Treat them right. Treat them with respect. Treat them with dignity, although he didn't use those words from our earlier slide. And you get satisfied people. They're happy that you treated them with respect, that you behaved ethically, that you gave them a safe and quality product. Building that relationship over time, spreading the word, allowing them to come back to you and others to come to you as well because of your reputation. Planned obsolescence. This is the idea of products needing replacement before they should, because they become, I'll put in quotes, obsolete. This is exactly the opposite of what our friend's Backstop, was that what it was, Backshop, is saying. Don't buy that new Apple phone because it has 12 extra lenses and comes in another color of gray. Is that really obsolete? It's also levied as a charge against producers who influence consumers' concepts of acceptable styles. Who in our classroom might this be leveled at? Nobody knows who this might be leveled at. Fashion students, raise your hand. Now, what's a fashion student here? Well, if there was a fashion student here, I don't believe there was nobody in fashion. You're being blamed for what? You're being blamed for changing styles every season and making, I put that in quotes, making men and women buy new clothing. You're terrible. Why do you do that? Now, when I was newly married and the country was much younger, my wife, season after season, had to get a new pair of blue jeans. I'm looking at the blue jeans. I have blue jeans at the time since high school, right? Maybe they didn't fit so good, but still. What do you need a new pair of blue jeans for? They don't fit. I said, darling, you haven't put on that much weight since last season. It's not the case. Fashion driving those purchases. I gave up on that argument. So you're being accused of causing products to be obsolete with changing the fashion. Or, again, back to Apple, really, intentionally holding back attractive functional features, then introducing them later to make the existing model obsolete. This is a set of folks picking on poor Steve Jobs when he was still alive. The Futurist, why the iPhone reeks of planned obsolescence. Planned obsolescence versus design deterioration. Planned obsolescence-induced insanity, or damn you, Steve Jobs, why must you torment me? By constantly coming up all the time with a new product that makes my old phone obsolete. In France, again, Europe has a much different view of these things. They passed legislation that requires companies to tell you the expected lifespan of a product. So it gives consumers information about how long that device will last before they roll out the new one that you just have to have. So an interesting approach to this issue of obsolescence. Poor service to disadvantaged consumers is an issue leveled at marketers, and it's often true. Disadvantaged consumers are served poorly when the poor are forced to shop in smaller stores where they pay more for inferior goods. In the news regularly, but quite a bit recently, what company, what brand, what retailer is blamed for having this approach to business? Nada. So dollar stores are often blamed for having this approach to business. They're in areas where big retailers don't want to settle. Their prices are one for one more expensive than a big retailer, big grocery store would have. And some people would argue that some of their goods are inferior. Dollar store, by the way, would counter argue, we're here to serve the public. We're doing the best we can given the situation we're in. And there's no grocery store willing to come in. So they would counter argue that a little bit. Criticism of dollar stores. Redlining by national chain stores, where they just draw a circle around an area. We're not doing business in here because it's a poor neighborhood, because it's unsafe. Redlining charges have been leveled against insurers who won't insure in a particular area, banks who won't bring local banking, healthcare providers, and others. So folks say, that's not fair. Why are you treating these people so badly? The poor are targeted for rapid refunds, where fees for your rapid refund start at $130 and average $275 with a 245% annual percentage rate. They will say, well, no, this isn't intended for a year. This is like a 30-day loan, or, you know, it's just a short-term thing. So nobody really pays 245%. Some people can't pay it back in time, and that APR, that loan rate goes up and up. 10.6 million low-income families participated in whatever year this was. It gave 1.4 billion profits to the industries. Pretty sure they're taking advantage of the poor folks in their neighborhood. Cultural pollution is leveled at us as well. Why are you showing commercials like that to my children? Why are you promoting? I have a joke that won't be that funny, but it's sort of funny to me, so you can laugh along like it's funny. When I grew up, you could not sit at your dining room table with your young daughter and hear about erectile dysfunction on the TV set. That's true on both cases, because it's a thing. Why do I have to hear that while I'm sitting there with my daughter? So mass communication itself is imprecise. They probably aren't actually trying to reach my daughter while I'm at the dinner table, but I watch the news, and that's where I am. That's where they advertise their product. So it reaches outside their target segment. But nonetheless, we recognize advertising helps to fund these places where we see this stuff. Websites, radio, television, magazines, newspapers. So ads are there for a reason. And we can argue a little bit that a consumer can opt for technologies or media choices that reduce or eliminate the ads. So, hey, it's imprecise. We're there because we help make these things affordable to you, and you can choose not to watch the shows that have it, is the argument.
We all know sex.
So, here's some commentary on the topic of cultural pollution and why advertisers are so terrible.
We all know sex sells. It's used in commercials, in movies, in TV. But should sex be used to sell stuff to teenagers? New provocative ads for the acne cream Clearasil have parents really upset, including Mike Galanos. I'm a parent. I'm a little upset myself here too. This is tonight's Get to the Point segment, and boy, woo.
Let's face it, we work with some pretty open-minded people. Some of the words they used, appalling, disgusting, give you the creeps. We're talking about Clearasil here to help with teens with acne for years now. Well, they've got this May Cause Confidence campaign, a couple of racy ones. One of them here, we basically have a 16-year-old hitting on his friend's mom. Let's check it out.
Hi, guys.
Hey, I'm going to get my stuff. So, Miss Kelly, how are things? Everything good?
Yeah, thanks.
Must be lonely now that Mr. K left. I'm really good company.
Clearasil Ultra Treatment Cream.
All right, there you have it. I just don't get this. In this day and age, when you've got teachers, we've done the stories, jumping in the sack with their students.
Absolutely.
Mary Kay Letourneau, we're bringing this. All right, joining me now from Washington to talk about this. Melissa Henson, she's with the Parents Television Council. She wants the ads off the air. We're going to get to her in a minute. Also from New York, Debbie Wolf, the co-founder of People Against Censorship. All right, Debbie. Like I said, I told you, we just mentioned some of the reactions. It's disgusting. How are you supporting this ad?
It's not so much the ad that I'm supporting as the right to air it and being against people looking to pull things off the air. Our country is full of people with very different moral compasses. And for one group or even two groups to say you should listen to my moral compass instead of everybody else's concerns me. I thought the ads were funny. I thought they were over the top. And if you look at all three of them, I really don't see how you can't get the humor.
Okay. But when you mention censorship like that, personally, I think an ad is worse than a show because the ad is like an ambush. I don't know it's coming. All of a sudden, 30 seconds later, before I can even grab the remote and change the dial, this has happened. Now I have to have a talk with my 12-year-old. What do you think of that?
I don't see how you can hold advertisers to a higher moral standard than you can to pop culture in general. When you have people looking at Britney Spears, looking at Paris Hilton, looking at everything that's on television, why is Clearasil held to a higher standard? Because they made a joke that you find offensive. It's funny. Do you really think Clearasil is advocating young boys to hit on their friends' mothers? That's just silly.
Granted, there is a humor in there, but what does my 15-year-old understand that? Let's show the next one. This one basically deals with a 16-year-old sex pod. Let's check this one out.
Here's her first tooth. Isn't she cute?
Yeah.
Oh, and here she is, naked in the bath. You should see me now. No.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right. Who are the players here? Let's stay with you, Debbie, on this one real quick. Mom's a powerless buffoon. You got horny, awkward teen in the middle, and the girl's the sex bot. Do we really need to sex up our teens any more than they already are?
I don't know. I don't know where we got 16-year-olds, first of all. I don't see
she doesn't look much older than that, but go ahead. Make your point.
I'm not sure why we got, how we know that the boy is horny either. But you asked where the parents come in on this, or how does my daughter respond to this? How do my children respond to it? The response is because you as a parent are there, and you're watching this commercial, and you have an opportunity to explain to your children how they should react. If you look on the message boards that are attacking this ad, there are also people saying, my daughter, my son looked at that and thought that was awful. That's because they educated their children to the moral code that they are seeking. And that's how you deal with ads like this.
Well, I shouldn't be forced by Clearasil or anybody else to have this conversation when my son or daughter isn't ready. Let's get Melissa Henson in on this, again, with the Parents Television Council. Am I being overly sensitive or a prude on this one, Melissa?
No, I don't think you're being overly sensitive at all. I'm disturbed that this is part of a larger pattern of using sex. And of course, we know that they've used sex to sell products for decades, generations. But this is, I think, part of a trend of using very overtly sexual imagery and messaging to target very young consumers. It's not just this. It's, you know, the Carl's Jr. hamburger ads advertising flat buns where they're, you know, teenage boys singing about their teachers. Posterior. And I think it's just all over the top, unnecessary. And I'm very disturbed by the fact that Clearasil's creative team can't think of a better way to promote confidence in young
girls.
We
wanted to get a representative from Clearasil. Yeah. Here's their statement. Want to let everybody know. It says, our objective is to inform and entertain, not to offend. We have found that Clearasil consumers see this ad as we intended, a humorous and unrealistic presentation of an awkward family event. I don't know many awkward family events like that, I think we're going to have to leave it there. We've run out of time. This has been a good one. We appreciate it. Debbie Wolf with People Against Censorship and Melissa Henson
Thank you.
Parents Television Council. Appreciate your time from both of you. And now we want to know what you think of this one. Do you think these ads are raunchy? Do you agree with me and think these are over the top, irresponsible at best? Or, hey, am I the prude here? Let us know. Email us, cnn.com/primenews. Click on the link. Email us. Video mail us, for that matter. Yeah, they put me on TV. They might have put you on as well.
So, what do you think? How many of you think they're really over the top? That wasn't necessary. Okay, we got a fair number of hands. How many of you think those ads are just downright unethical? They're over the top, but not unethical. How many of you just found them to be humorous or funny? Well, that's some of us think both they're over the top and humorous and funny, okay? So, whatever your opinion, do you think such ads like this, they should be outright banned? We should not be allowed to show these sorts of ads to the public. Should they be censored? We ought to have a board that looks at this sort of stuff and answers the question whether or not they're appropriate. A censorship board? Are you sort of raising your hand maybe? A little bit? A little bit? A little bit? A little bit? Okay, we got a few folks that think that. Or should consumer response be the main influence on this sort of behavior? What happens, and we've seen it in other domains, what happens when people truly find something offensive? What do? They stop buying the product. They boycott the product. The most recent example being, what is it, Bud Light? 33% of your sales went down. Slippery slopes when you start doing banning, where do you draw the line, or censorship. So my personal argument as a marketer is use good sense when you run your ads. Expect consumer backlash if you do the wrong thing. Clarisil clearly is not out to offend a bunch of the population. Our objective is to inform and entertain, not to offend. We have found that our consumers, the intended audience, they swap over into other audiences, found the ad as intended, humorous, an unrealistic presentation of an awkward family event. The audience wasn't horrified by it. Mike Calvin has used a lot of sex to sell his products. Sorry to let you know that. There are over 500,000 photos on Instagram, hashtag MyCalvins. Most are selfies of lean 20-somethings in their beds and bathroom mirrors, proudly united by cotton underwear bearing the name Calvin Klein. These are unpaid, authentic posts endorsing the brand. They're an extremely powerful way to interact with young people and far more effective than the more obviously paid-for influencer posts or a printed ad. Whether or not you've seen this particular thing, how many people have seen things like this on the internet? Yeah? Sex is being used to sell underwear products. And I blank in my Calvins. Not everyone is happy with this sort of thing. Let's see if this one works this way.
Hi, I'm Heidi Zapp, CEO and co-founder of Third Love. But more than that, I'm a strong and powerful woman, and proud of it. I believe that women can do anything without limitation, and that we aren't defined by our underwear. I'm personally offended by the Calvin Klein billboard ad in New York City that highlights a dated gender stereotype, that men are the breadwinners while women are sex objects. Women not only deserve respect, we demand it. The women of New York and women everywhere join me in saying we are no longer accepting this antiquated stereotype and instead are creating our own gender definitions, that a woman can be anything she wants to be.
Just wondering if you take a look at that billboard there, if you could give us your thoughts and reaction.
It's terrible. And it's offensive. I'm not happy about it. I won't give Calvin Klein my money.
First of all, she would not have been happy if the tagline with the woman said, I make money in my Calvins. That's what the guy's ad said. But second of all, my opinion, shared with you, is that woman's exactly right. It's as it should be. You don't like what the marketer is doing, don't give them your money. So if consumers don't agree, they think you're doing things in bad taste, don't buy the product. And if enough people don't buy the product, guess what? The marketer will stop doing whatever that behavior is, right? If you're at home and you have your young child listening to my scintillating voice and my outstanding lecture, but you have a strong moral compass and are easily offended by stuff that might be considered in bad taste, you're about to see it. So scoot the folk out of the room. If you too are sensitive to sexualizing people, turn your eyes away until I'm done with this next slide. I don't need any lawsuits. This is a real slide. Okay. This is I flash in my hashtag Calvins. You can see why it might be considered in bad taste. Frank Donio says, you've crossed a line. J.C. Danner says, this is tasteless. Uber Cool says, another exponent of the hashtag Vorgasm Uber trend. So, a writer, Peter Davis, editor at large at Paper Magazine, says, look, A peek up actress Kara Kristen's skirt to glimpse her CK panties is not kiddie porn. It's sexy and sex sells. And Clara isn't 15 years old. No one knows how to sell underwear and fragrances and clothing by promoting scandalous sex better than Calvin Klein. Every erotically charged fashion ad posted at post Calvin Klein's golden era in the 70s and 80s owes everything to that brand, from Tom Ford and his infamously steamy and near-naked Gucci campaigns to Dolce & Gabbana's oiled-up men in Speedos. This is a current ad. It's running. I can see why it might be considered tasteless, but it's also sexy. It sells product. How many of you guys know this guy? Nobody knows who that is. Huh. Must be before your time. So that wasn't Bing Crosby. Nobody knows. I used to know his name. Justin something. The hashtag MyCalvins campaign has led to significant growth on Calvin Klein's social platforms since the February 2014 launch. It's bulked its Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter followings by 2.2 million, 1.8 million, and 1 million respectively. Facebook currently has over 14.3 million Calvin followers. I'm just curious what it is today. Is it dropped down? Well, it's 14.4 million followers. 23.9 million followers on Instagram, and Twitter has 4.1 million followers. It reached a global audience, surpassing 469 million fans, yielding to 23.5 million fan interactions. In July 2014, the brand expanded its advertising to Tinder. As Chief Marketing Officer Melissa Goldie explained, the platform is authentic and true to how this consumer communicates. As a direct result of the Justin Bieber, thank you. You do know who he is. You just weren't going to tell me. Justin Bieber campaign, Calvin Klein benefited from 3.6 million additional followers across his social channel. Clearly that worked for them in 2021. While the fashion industry in general, and Calvin Klein in particular, usually markets by being outrageous, PJ Lang by Calvin Klein. So you guys know PJ Lang? Is it, someone you know? Yes? No? In one especially comic video, Travis Bennett promotes his favorite Calvin Klein jeans without wearing said jeans. It was an oddball approach. We've seen Calvin Klein ads push many boundaries, but never one quite like this. Dave called me and has the idea. We bounce back and forth, Bennett tells us. PJ Lang, to me, is creating with no boundaries, as cliche as it may sound. Hope this is still up and working. Here we are. We need this.
Good. See, I'm just finishing up right now. I can't believe that Calvin really gave me this, man. I feel really honored. This is crazy. It's like a big achievement. How's it look? It could look better considering how much they pay me for it. But I mean, dude, I'm gonna take home the money, and what they gonna do? Beat me up? I could have given a little more time and effort, but I mean, you know, I'm a little last minute with everything. So, did I blow it? No, I didn't blow it. No, I mean, I put a lot of me into it. I think when you see it, you'll notice that it's a lot of taco touch on there. A shout out on here? Okay, wait, I should know this. What's your last name again? Okay, getting mad at me isn't gonna help this, so what is your last name?
Tasteless, sure.
Yes, good. What? Yeah, I'm just finishing it right now.
210,000 views. People watching the tasteless sort of thing. Oops, I didn't really mean to be here. Gotta watch what you click. So there we go. We are a Pepsi campus. Do you know that? You can't buy Coke here, you buy Pepsi products. We're a Pepsi campus. PepsiCo recycling, social responsible marketing, sustainability. At Pepsi, we believe there's an opportunity to change how the world produces, distributes, consumes, and disposes of foods and beverages in order to tackle the shared challenges we face. We aim to use our scale, reach, and expertise to help build a more sustainable food system, one that can meet human needs for nutrition and enjoyment, and continue to drive economic and social development without exceeding the natural boundaries of the planet. We have a fantastic recycling program. Won't you get involved and recycle more than we're recycling now? Help us out.
You wouldn't do something halfway, would you? U.S., we're recycling less than 50% of our bottles and cans. Join PepsiCo in the recycling of every last bottle and can.
Do something good for the environment, get involved in their program, help them to recycle. I still have 3 minutes on my watch. You guys have a different time? I have 4:57. You guys have somewhere to be? I'll hold you up. A few more minutes. Give me a chance here. So what is management's response to the need to be ethical based on what we've talked about? You guys know Aveda as a company? Yeah? So Aveda fully recognizes the importance of being ethical. And in their mission and heritage say, look, we are the earth. Our mission is to care for the world we live in, from the products we make to the ways in which we give back to society. We strive to set an example for environmental leadership and responsibility, not just in the world of beauty, but around the world. So we have corporate culture. Kraft Heinz has a code of ethics. Remember we talked the other day, can you influence people's ethics? Don't know about whether that's going to affect what they think, but you can certainly affect how they behave. So here's our values. We expect our employees to live by these values. If you have a concern, talk to our ombudsman, and it applies to our suppliers as well. So we respond to the need to be ethical there. And the behavior of top management. If top managers aren't ethical, your people won't be ethical. Have an ombudsman for ethics. Have somebody that you can go to report ethical problems anonymously, or at least not with being, you know, revealed as to who you are. Our corporate ombudsman office will help you take care of any accusation that you run into of unethical behavior. Managing the ethical environment of your firm and your employees is what you have to do. Now you can go, and I'll wrap the final parts up next time. Thank you for your consideration.